Welcome to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm Peter Hostrasser, the host of the podcast. Hey, thank you so much for listening. If you get a chance, subscribe to this podcast. You'll be hearing all the things around education reform, disrupting education, what's new, and today, who is a rebel. Also, if you get a chance, head over to disrupteducation.co or peterhostrasser.com. You can read my blog, see where I'm going to be speaking, what I am up to these days around education reform. Lastly, if you are looking for a gap year program, a college readiness program, or even just transitioning jobs in life, you want to head over to getahallpass.com. We help you amplify your learning, engineer your career, and repurpose your life. That's getahallpass.com. Today on the podcast, I have Carl Milsom. He's an education development professional. He is the leader of the hashtag Rebel Teacher Network, and he's all about rethinking, rebuilding, and rebelling. He is out of Jakarta, Indonesia, and he will be talking about his education path and what he is doing with the Rebel Teacher Network, coming up right after this. Have you ever thought about creating courses and training online? Without a partner to guide you through that process, you're going to be stressed about why your learners aren't engaged or how to create updated content, missing revenue opportunities, and not even having enough time. I know because I create online courses, and I have a solution for you, e-learning partners. You don't have to be overwhelmed anymore. Become a partner with e-learning partners to create your courses and training stress-free and achieve the results you want to see. If you are thinking about wanting to create a course or training online and you believe like I believe that no expertise should go unheard, then click the e-learning partners link in the notes of this podcast and you can start your journey to create your courses and training stress-free. If you want all that and more from the e-learning partners, hit the link in the podcast notes because there's a free masterclass for you to take. That's right, a free masterclass. Hit that link today. The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Castbox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Welcome to Disrupt Education. I got a great guest with us today, Carl Milsom, the Rebel Teacher Network. I'm just going to start there, Carl. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, man.
Sure. First, thanks for having me on, Peter. I've been looking forward to it. You mentioned the Rebel Teacher Network, but maybe I'll loop around to that. So I'm a teacher. I live here in Indonesia, and I've been here for around 12 years now, I think, sort of right on the border of about 12 years, where I came and started teaching English, say 12 years ago. Before that, I was peripherally in education in the UK. I ran some youth clubs, did some youth work with military children or children of military families, I should say. So I was in the peripheries of education there, but I wasn't a teacher. And I started teaching English when I came back to Indonesia. And I now do teacher training, and I still teach some English as well. And the transition really there was because when I was teaching English and working alongside other teachers and in a variety of different schools and institutions, I became very quickly aware of the lack of competency in teaching. And I became very quickly aware after that the reason was the lack of training. There was very little training available. There still is now very little training available. So I got into some kind of very low grade training early on. I'd been teaching for about 3 years and I was already training, which raised some eyebrows at the time, but it really wasn't intended to be as arrogant as that might sound. As inexperienced as I was, I had taken training courses and I had I'd had a fairly intensive 3 years, and knew though I was I was in a position to be offering insights to people who'd been teaching a lot longer than me, but had never had any kind of training or development. They'd come out of school, they'd spent, 3 years in a university studying textbooks, and then they found themselves in the classroom and didn't know what to do. And so I took a very different route to my teaching career. I don't have a degree, but I did take teacher courses, and as I said, I got a lot of hands-on experience in the youth work as a para educator, you might say. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lot of classroom experience, even though I didn't have the formal qualifications. And here the teachers had the opposite. They had all the formal qualifications, but not a lot of the teaching competencies. And over the years, I've basically just dove more and more into the training side. And now I do some English teaching, but I mostly train teachers, both here in Indonesia and a bit of online training as well. But my focus is really on trying to develop the competencies of teachers here in Indonesia. And then the Rebel Teacher Network that you mentioned, which is kind of born out of that goal, the aim of developing teachers, and realizing my limitations, I suppose, as a person with a small institution. There's only so much I can do by myself with direct training. And so now I'm gradually engaging more and more with online communities and trying to instigate an attitude of change, let's say, which I'm referring to obviously as a rebellion. Trying to get these teachers around the world to identify the ways in which they can initiate and implement change in their classrooms. And I guess that's who I am.
So there's a lot, and I want to unpack a lot of that. Then let's go into your education path, both traditionally and quote unquote non-traditionally. It's very interesting. You said as an educator, you weren't formally trained. I had a bachelor's degree as well, and then came back in into a certificate program to teach. So it wasn't the bachelor's degree, if you will, at university. So I see some synergy there, which is very, very rebellious of us, I guess. I don't know. I love it. But you have an interesting background in your education path. Not quite the stellar student, I hear. But talk about that path and what you learned from that, and where you are, what you're training people right now and how you're taking those lessons.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned my student experience. Yeah, I certainly wasn't. I wasn't a favorite. I wasn't a teacher's favorite by any stretch. And I think that there's something interesting there, because I suspect, and the comments might flood in and tell me how wrong I am. But I suspect, and I've commented elsewhere to this extent, that most teachers, most people who become teachers, enjoyed school and were good students, and their positive experience at school was what inspired them to teach. And I could be wrong about that, but the other teachers that I've worked with and the people that I've met and interacted with, there's a pattern, I think, where that seems to be true. And of course, or at least to me, it seems to make sense. If you enjoyed school, you'd be more likely to want to stick around and engage in a career in school. When I left school, I couldn't imagine stepping back in the building. And in fact, one of the reasons that I didn't go on to study a degree, apart from the fact that I wanted to get out of education anyway, the other reason was, when I left school, the only subject that I really was interested in, and the only subject, to be honest, that I did particularly well in, was English language. And I performed very well at English language and very badly at everything else. So there's a massive disparity. And if I were to have taken a degree, it would have been an English degree. And at the time, when I looked at that option, I thought, well, the only thing that I can imagine becoming with an English degree is an English teacher. And the last thing I want to do is get a career in teaching and go back to working in a school. I couldn't, I was so happy to be out. So the irony that now not only am I a teacher, but I am, a very passionate teacher. I love what I do, and I care very deeply about the profession that I'm engaged in. Had I foreseen this or felt differently, I might have gone and taken that degree, but I didn't. And I spent a couple of years kicking around a few different things. I very quickly got interested in social work and youth work and youth care and that kind of thing. And I did some voluntary work there, and then sort of, you know, that became more formal. And through that, which, as I say, was initially voluntary, I was very lucky that they invested in me quite heavily, and they put me through some local courses and some training, and, you know, some of it teacher oriented, some of it more risk management and healthcare and things like that. All of the things that are involved in social work and youth work, really. And the more I got involved in that, the more passionate I became about the field in general. And as I say, you know, that sort of loosely led me to where I am now. Obviously also halfway around the world. So there's other elements to that story, although nothing particularly interesting. So now I teach, and I would never have imagined that I would be a teacher. But very much I am.
Let's dive into some of the instances. Obviously, as a student, you've learned what teachers probably shouldn't do. I think I remember times where I had educators and I was like, what are you doing? This doesn't make any sense to me, or it's not connecting with me. And then also in those three probably very formative years when you are in education and you're seeing things going on, I remember a couple of those years, like, what the hell is going on here? Like, this is, what were some of those instances that you saw, or some of the pieces that you were like, I need to figure out how to train people on this? What were those topics that just came out right away?
I mean, some of it does go all the way back to my time in school. And something that I think, I always struggle to phrase this, so feel free to cut me out, but something that I've always found interesting about education, something unique about education as a field, in the sense that teachers, there's this weird cycle where education feeds itself. As a student, you spend, you know, 12 years plus in school with teachers, and then you go into more school to be taught how to be a teacher by other teachers, and then you graduate from that and you are a teacher, and you perpetuate that cycle. And there's nothing else is quite like that, because whatever else you study, if you study to be a pilot or a doctor or an accountant or whatever, you spend all the same time in school, but then when you get into your career, you are in a different environment and you're studying with different intentions. And your time in school taught you knowledge and information and hopefully some skills and competencies as well, although that's part of my problem with the system is that it doesn't, but let's imagine you had a good experience. So you were learning at school, but you weren't following a model. For teachers, especially for students who were happy with school, who enjoyed school, they spent their time looking at their teachers as a model for how to be a teacher, right? And then they graduate and they become a teacher, and they refer back to the 12 years that they spent in school with teachers and go, well, that's how to teach. And they perpetuate that. There's no other profession where you spend 12 years of your life, 8 hours a day, embedded in the environment that you're then going to spend your career in. So I was picking, because I didn't enjoy school, when I then got into teaching, I looked back, and rather than saying, you know, oh, well, that's how to teach, I looked back and thought, I absolutely do not want to be the kind of teacher that I hated having as a student, you know. For me, there's a disruption there, where it was only natural for me to break the cycle rather than perpetuate it. I wanted to be the opposite of what so many of my teachers had been, and what I was seeing in so many of the teachers that I was working with as well, of course. And then when I started teaching, as an English teacher and an English teacher overseas, there's also, you know, there are attitudes about that and about what I do where we're kind of, you know, placed below the level of teacher. Teachers already get less respect than they deserve, and English teachers abroad get much less than that. We're kind of seen as, you know, sort of semi-professional teachers. And unfortunately, some of that is founded. So the teachers that I was working alongside in my institution, the other expat English teachers like me, and many of them didn't take it very seriously. Many of them were travelers earning money while they traveled. And they were, you know, more interested in the nightlife that the country had to offer. They were planning to be here for 6 months or a year and then move on to the next country and explore the nightlife there. And that showed in the classroom. It was very apparent what their priorities were, and that they weren't really interested in a career in teaching. They didn't see themselves as career teachers. I didn't really have any long-term plans when I started teaching, but I very quickly realized that this was something that I cared about, that I was good at as well, I felt, which, you know, helped. I felt like I was good at what I was doing. I cared about it. And I looked around at the people I was teaching alongside, and I thought, this is not what I want to be associated with. You know, I don't want to be a part of the image that they're creating. And it's no surprise that the profession is denigrated when so much of it is made up with that. So that's worse than the kind of the formal school experience in terms of the attitudes that you find. So I very much wanted to get away from that. And so then I started doing more work in schools here. And that's when I saw, again, a lot of what I'd seen as a student in the UK. The UK tends to be referred to as one of the better systems, and in some ways it is, but also in a lot of other ways, it's no different from anywhere else. You know, the same things are happening in the classrooms all around the world. And one of the main things at the root of that, I think, is the lack of conscious intention in teaching. So teachers go into the classroom and they teach without really, you know, conceptualizing or intellectualizing or whatever you might say. They don't really think about what it is they're doing. They are following a model. As I said, they may be just doing whatever their teachers did. You know, they're doing the same thing. They have a curriculum and various other things. Now, of course, I'm not talking about all teachers, but so many teachers are just walking into the classroom and going through the motions. And so, you know, they're not delivering a very high quality education. The students are not receiving a very high quality education. And those sound like the same thing, but they're not, because there is a gap between what the teacher does and what the student receives. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, if you're not conscious of that, if you don't spend basically your whole lesson from start to finish thinking about that, am I overcoming that gap? Am I making sure that what I do has a direct impact on what the students do? And am I giving my students the opportunity to learn the things I hope they learn, rather than thinking, have I said all of the things I came here to say? Which has got nothing to do with what the students may or may not have heard, learned, understood, and everything else. So these are some of the core things, I guess, at the bottom. I don't know if I've said anything very clear or helpful there, but that's what that was the environment, that was the mentality that I found myself embedded in that I wanted to do something about.
Coming up after the break, Carl digs deeper into the Rebel Teacher Network and what he hopes to build with it. There's more Disrupt Education podcast coming up right after these messages. I recently asked Jake, who is a sophomore in high school, why he uses SpikeView to share his learning journey.
I think it's really cool that, you know, SpikeView is really putting that abstract into concrete data and knowledge and then displaying that to the outside world. And I think SpikeView is different than anything else out there. Like I said before, because it's really taking that, you know, those abstract skill sets and those abstract experiences and putting them into data that, you know, is actually mathematic and scientific and, you know, that matches you up with the best programs and, you know, best places for you. People, you know, who are really trying to make those changes in the world, and they're going to be using SpikeView because SpikeView is that app where you can, you know, take those experiences and take those passions and put them out there and share with other people. And that's, you know, that's really powerful. And to that, you know, that professional networking piece, you know, to be with other like-minded teenagers, that puts you ahead. That puts you ahead in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think anyone who uses SpikeView right now has a leg up in the future. And excited to see, you know, where those SpikeView alumni head up.
Head to SpikeView.com. Start your portfolio now for free. The checkbox, right? So I'm checkboxing things on both ends, right? As a student, just had a conversation yesterday with a student. Don't check the box. How can I help you dig into who you are, what you want to do? Yeah. And it's a humanistic approach on both sides. Is there systemic things? I mean, you've seen several different systems. I'm in the United States. You've seen UK, Indonesia, possibly some more. What would some of the systemic things that you see change? I'm hearing humanistic approach or human-centered in your commentary about, you know, who is the student, who is the teacher first, and then we do that. What are some of the things that you see that are kind of starting to work in this network and of people that you've expanded on out of the Rebel Teacher Network?
I think, first of all, it's been very refreshing to see how many people are on board with some of the things that we're trying to achieve and talk about through the Rebel Teacher Network. The response to, you know, podcast appearances like this and shows like yours are very positive. I get a lot of pushback as well. There are a lot of teachers who, you know, the irony of everything I just said about the lack of intention and the lack of insight in the approach to teaching. There is a worse side even than that, though, because there are people who do all that and they believe that they're doing the right thing, and they'll argue for it and they'll fight for it. I don't quite know how that happens, but it does. So I do get pushback. I do get a lot of argument, but there's a lot of agreement as well. And I think the agreement's one thing. It's nice to be agreed with. The nicer thing is when somebody comes around. And the Rebel Teacher Network is more about that. It's not just an attempt to connect people, although that's the easier part. It's an attempt to bring more people on board, not just to find the people who are already doing the things we're talking about, but to help people realize that they want to make a change as well. And teachers who maybe have been going through the motions and perpetuating the cycle, and then realizing, oh, maybe what I'm doing is not the best for the students. Maybe what I'm doing is not the most considered. Maybe, you know, this post on LinkedIn or this YouTube video, maybe this guy has something worth thinking about. And it's small changes like that. And it is the smaller things that, you know, I try and have big conversations about the system, and I try and make small points about things that teachers do. So, I mean, the simplest thing, I suppose, and this comes up because I just had the conversation today with a handful of teachers. The simplest thing is when you walk into the classroom, you can either walk into the classroom and spend the first 5 minutes kind of shuffling through your bag, turning on the projector, setting up your laptop, reading the attendance, tell the students to get their books out, and then start reading the material. Or you can walk into the classroom and say hello and ask the students, how are you? How was the weekend? And, you know, you can engage with the students in a meaningful way. And recognize the students as people, as humans. And I say people rather than children as well. I mean, you know, if you're teaching children, they are children. But there's something to be said for trying to establish an equal mutual respect with the students. And that can go pretty young. You know, you can try and achieve that with quite young students, which again is something that I think is often overlooked. So just something as simple as greeting the students in a meaningful way. And that really became important to me when I started working with the teachers here, because it's so much worse than it is in where I came from and where you will have gone to school, presumably. Because here, and a lot of Southeast Asia, when the teacher walks in, they do everything that I've just mentioned, you know, all of that busy work that keeps them completely at a distance, completely disconnected with the students. I'm over here in my corner doing my thing. You have to wait. And then when you've finished waiting, I will teach you something. But while that's going on, the students, when the teacher comes in, the students all have to stand up in unison. They greet the teacher in that sing-songy, good morning, Mr. Carl. And then the teacher, you know, allows them to sit down. Okay, thank you, sit down. And then they continue with the performance, as I see it. But the whole thing for me, because I was an English teacher, it was easy for me to point out to the teachers, you know, that's not a conversation, right? You're trying to teach language, you're trying to teach communication. And when the students say to you, good morning, Mr. Carl, and you say, okay, thank you, sit down, that's not a conversation, right? If you wake up next to your wife and she says, good morning, and you say, okay, sit down, that's not going to go well, right?
No.
So the first thing I noticed was the lack of application of language teaching for language teachers. And then when I started working outside of the language field, I then started to think about that as not just non-communicative, but as essentially dehumanizing.
In this network, as you're building these conversations and just something simple, like you mentioned there, you know, that's not a conversation. Trust me, I would never do that with my wife.
Or your child, by the way, right?
True, child, true. Right? Yes. It seems so rigid and cold and, you know, especially in the English language as you are a language teacher. Right. How can people get involved with the Rebel Teacher Network? Where can people find you and then see what you're doing? And you have some podcasts out there. You have a group of podcasters. Privileged to be having you on this podcast. Where can people find you and how can we get the word out?
It's still very new, and it began essentially as a hashtag on LinkedIn, really. That's where I'm most active, so people can find me and find the Rebel Teacher Conversations most present on LinkedIn. And from the hashtag and an attempt to provoke some interesting conversations, it kind of grew into sort of a community. And then I started to refer to it as a network because I had my podcast that I was running, and I started to, you know, collaborate with a few others, and so we brought podcasts on to the network. I don't know if at this point we announce the arrival of the Disrupt Education podcast on the network.
I'm game.
So very, very proud to have you on board with us as well. Very pleased to bring you into the network. It's about the kind of conversations you're having. That's what we want to be about. So it's a real privilege to have you on the network and to be continuing that conversation through your podcast as well. So the podcasts are available on our YouTube channel, which is the Rebel Teacher Network channel on YouTube. I'm available and most active on LinkedIn, and that's where most of the conversations take place. And at the moment, it exists at those two levels, the community, the people engaging in the conversations, the hashtag, interacting and answering questions and having interesting conversations, and the creators, people like you and me who are putting the content out, making the podcast. And I want to continue to expand both of those levels. I want to be doing more at the community level. I want to have more conversations. I want those conversations to be more, you know, more lively, more active. I want to maybe formalize them in some, you know, events and have more intentional conversations. And at the creator level, I want to bring on, obviously, you know, more people. I want to get more people creating. I want to get more people not just participating in those conversations, but initiating conversations. And I also want to be working towards more types of content. So we'll soon be putting out some written content in the form of newsletters and maybe, you know, publishing some books as a part of the network. Some courses are slowly on the way, and I want to do more in that at that level. And then in the middle, I want there to be another level where, you know, it's sort of, it's membership oriented, where people can kind of log in and they can be members and they can be really active. They can commit to being a member of the network. And, you know, they'll have access to much more structured content and things like that. That's not happened yet, but that's where I see it going.
It's a great big goal. And honestly, when I started this podcast years ago, I was seeking out things like this. So I really appreciate you. I really appreciate the Rebel Teacher Network. I just know that it has really enhanced me just getting on some networks and different thinkers. So thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing the Rebel Teacher Network with us on Disrupt Education.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. We'll see you next time on Disrupt Education.